Welcome to Podcast Gurus, brought to you by JHM Marketing. Our guest today is Lucinda Carney, the CEO of Actor Software and host of the HR Uprising, where she shares insights and interviews with industry experts on the topics related to HR, leadership, and personal development. Today, expect to learn the importance of podcasts in elevating personal brand visibility, generating inbound leads and enhancing credibility, and explore the strategies for launching a podcast, including the importance of having multiple episodes available at launch. Discover the techniques for keeping discussions on track, summarizing key points, and ensuring digestible content for listeners. Before we begin, please remember to subscribe wherever you listen to this podcast, and if you're there, please also leave us a review. 5 stars do amazing things for the podcast, and we're going to keep bringing you different gurus in the podcast industry to explain to you all the different ways you can use your podcast to help to grow your business. With that, here is Lucinda Carney.
Lucinda, thank you so much for coming on the Podcast Gurus. We're going to talk about your podcast today, your business, and your advice to podcasters. Can you tell me the story, maybe to begin with, of the HR Uprising podcast? What are you doing there?
Well, so the HR Uprising podcast, and actually it's been going almost 5 years as we speak now, and 228 episodes. And when I started out, I wanted to inspire HR professionals. One of the criticisms often of people in HR is that maybe they're not strategic, they're too tactical. And I felt that was an unfair criticism, but a lot of the time is people don't have time to get the learning they need, or maybe thinking differently or believing in themselves. And so I was looking at different names of it, and that's where kind of the HR Uprising. So it works on two levels. It's a bit about, uprising of HR being standing up and being counted, but also rising up in an organization strategically. So that's where the name came from. And that's really because it was something that I was passionate about, helping HR professionals to really claim their place in the workplace and be respected. So it's a rise up. That's what was behind it.
I love it. So that's for the name of the show. Can you, what does it mean being too tactical? Me, who is absolutely not in the HR space to begin with. What is it, too tactical?
Yeah. So what often happens with HR, everyone would be familiar with what HR do, I guess, in terms of in a business. So they tend to be involved in the people issues. The challenge is that often the people issues in an organization can be very time consuming, and maybe HR even end up having to almost take over the management of people issues, when really what they should be doing is guiding and empowering managers to address those issues, because that's more effective. On top of that, often their roles can end up being very administrative, whether it's managing leave or absence or pay. Things become quite administrative. However, all those things are really, really important. Those are probably things that should be managed as processes. But to really add value in an organization, we need to think about things from where is the organization going in terms of what's the goal of that business? What are their people challenges? How could we think about, from an organizational development point of view, what sort of skills do we need in the organization in the future? How we should reshape it? How do we manage change better? So that's more strategic. And the challenge you often have, and that would add a lot of long-term value to an organization, but the challenge you often have is the HR professionals are so busy doing the busy work that perhaps they shouldn't be having to do. They don't have the space, or sometimes they don't have the confidence and therefore the sort of the ear of the board. So maybe they're not senior enough and they are not respected enough, when my view is that he should be. So it's kind of, it's about that, helping people to have more confidence in the things that they can do in an organization to make longer term strategic value, and freeing themselves up from more administrative roles, again, by putting in place processes, training managers, so that managers are better able to do those things. So you're making more effective use of yourself as a person, as an HR resource.
Why do you think is that? Why do you think HR departments ended up working on those, I'm going to call them low added value tasks, but you see what I mean here, instead of focusing on the strategic ones, empowering the managers to actually manage what ends up falling on the on the HR's plate but shouldn't? Like, why did organizations end up being structured unintentionally or undeliberately like this?
I think there's a few possible reasons. It's not just one reason. I don't think it's a coincidence that 80% of HR professionals below direct level are female. Now, does that mean that they therefore are harder on themselves, are less likely to, that they'll do things for other people? Maybe they're more helpful. They may, is this about, I'm not saying that it's that they get discriminated against, although I'm not saying they don't either. I think it is strange that HR directors are more likely to be male and relatively in terms of the whole sort of population. We're a very female dominated population. So I think there is some historic discrimination, but then I believe that we allow that to happen to ourselves. So if we don't seize, you know, educate ourselves, if we don't challenge, if we comfort zone, so doing those easier things, the comfort zone, rather than challenging the status quo in the organization and standing up and demonstrating that you know more, can add more value. So some of it is about confidence and those sort of things. And that's, again, hopefully through the podcast, people can get ideas of, and examples would be quite a popular episodes that I would do would be how to type episodes. So how to design an organizational development strategy, how to design an HR balanced scorecard, how to build a learning culture. So quite a lot of the topics that I do, and those would be my solo episodes, are of that kind of thing, because people don't always have the confidence to know where to start. It actually isn't rocket science, but if you don't quite think like that and no one's ever mentored you to help you, then hopefully the podcast can be more of a mentor to people and give them some of those skills, confidence, and know where to start to be able to take those things on.
So I love this. I'm going to take quite a tangent here in this episode, but it's actually something I've always wondered. How do you impact, how do you change a culture of an organization? So back in my days when I was working in corporate, so like in worldwide banks or in like PwC, to name them, like big consulting firms. How do you change a culture? I mean, for me, it's such an abstract topic. Like, it starts with the people you recruit, probably, but then how do you, I don't know, a culture of love or a culture of like challenging the status quo, as you mentioned, like how do you put things in place to make such structural changes that are so hard to grasp yet?
That's not an easy question to ask.
Sorry, that's not a softball here.
I have got quite a number of episodes on how to do culture change. But in short, I think the thing to feature in on it is about people, and it's about leadership, and it's about the style of the way in which they interact with others. So if you wanted to design a more kind culture or something like that, then you need to make sure that the behaviours of those leaders are reinforcing that. Are they saying thank you? Are they expecting people to work ridiculous hours? Are they role modelling, appropriate behaviours in terms of being kind, or actually making it safe for people? We talk about things called psychological safety, making it safe for people to make mistakes, to ask for help. So those sort of things, you want to look at the behaviours of leaders, and there are many tools that you could do to start doing that. Whether you might do a vision session, you might do something like 360 degree feedback with questions that are relevant to the behaviours you're aspiring those leaders to model, so they become more self-aware as to what they're demonstrating and not. In reality, if you want to make radical change, you may need to get rid of some people who are just never going to be that type, and bring others in. So a lot of it comes down to leaders and behaviours, and masses of it. But there are other things that you could do in terms of a culture change, and there's processes that you follow, but you need to look at. So if you wanted to drive a high performance culture, for example, you might say, well, do people know what good looks like in this business? Do people have clear goals and objectives? Are they supported in achieving those? Do we reward people for performing, or do we have a remuneration system that basically rewards poor performance? You look also at the manager's behaviours. Do you have line managers who treat everyone the same, or are they people who are they fearful of calling out the low performers, or do they give feedback? So there's lots and lots of people stuff, again, leadership and management behaviours, that will reinforce a culture in the direction or away from the direction of where you want to go. So the key thing with culture change is you've got to be clear on what you're trying to achieve, and then think about what behaviours will reinforce or block it and look to change it. And also, you don't change culture overnight, right? It takes, I'd say, 2 or 3 years to start to get a feel for something like that.
Why did you choose podcasts as a medium for such I guess that's not the only topic to tackle, right? Culture change in your podcast. But one might think, There are so many ways to approach this kind of very complex, deep topic. I don't know, thinking about blog articles or like even YouTube videos. I mean, plenty, right? Why did you choose podcasts as a medium to carry that message and help HR appraise their career?
I already did a lot of the traditional blogs. So I would have written, really, because I got a lot of thought leadership out there. So I set up my business in 2009. I've been in sort of the HR organizational development space for 25, 30 years. So I already got a lot of that knowledge and I had put it out there in the shape of ebooks, white papers, blogs, etc. Must admit, haven't done loads of YouTube stuff, although any webinar that I do regular webinars, and through COVID I did weekly webinars, but I do monthly webinars, and often I will convert a webinar into a podcast episode. So it's a more concise. So the difference for me of the webinars is I make those very interactive. So we do them monthly, and I might do how to do culture change, and I get the audience really sort of talking to me. We'd have polls and that sort of thing. So it's more of an interactive webinar experience, and then I'll condense that learning, and sometimes the outputs that we got from that interactive webinar of the poll, and then I put that into the podcast episode. So that's so part of the answer to the question is I'd already got a lot of thought leadership and content out there in a paper or virtual paper form. And the other thing was I actually worked with a mentor or a coach in about 2018, and I run a software business, right? It's very hard. It's hard to be visible. Even if you've got things which are with SEO, so my blogs might be picking up on SEO, it's quite hard to be visible. You need to be in more medium, use a variety of media. And he said, actually, podcasting is really growing at that point. I mean, it's big now, but it was slightly on the start of the up, if you see there, maybe in terms of that. So not everybody's got a podcast now. At that point, and I thought, well, actually, it's a USP. It's a differentiator for the business. It's also a really good way of putting yourself out. Well, I say it's using me as a differentiator because I had always been a bit of a differentiator for our business because I'm an HR professional by background. So we are selling to people who are in roles similar to the role that I did, as opposed to being a sort of software person. So it's the way in which we can contribute, put back, which I talked about in terms of the title and the value, but it's also hopefully a way of demonstrating credibility and who you are as a person, because people buy people, right? So I do get people who say, oh, I listen to your podcast and would you come and do training with us, or you know, I came to Actus because I've heard the podcast and we know that you're going to think about more than just software. So it just makes you a little bit more personally identifiable.
I love that. So let's dig a little bit into this. How did you leverage the podcast? I want to talk about your software business in a second, but how did you leverage this podcast to, I don't know, I guess network, potentially even get in front of potential clients or develop an audience and an authority? Now I'm giving all the answers, obviously, but like, how did you apply this for your specific podcast and your specific business?
So I think to start off with, it was just let's try and make it good quality content and relevant to your target audience. And it has to be something that I know about and believe in. And I do a number of solo episodes. It's probably roughly 50-50. It's getting less now because I guess we've done 220 odd episodes. And most of the things that I feel personally confident to talk about, I've probably covered them. And so I will bring in experts for other things now to talk about, to make them more sort of general conversational. In terms of how do I make it relevant to the business? Well, I'm able to mention when I do my introduction, just very simple. It's kind of light touch marketing, I think. So I'm not doing a hard sell, but I'm saying this is who I am. This is the business. This is what we do. Feel free to come in touch with us. So I've been contacted by people saying, oh, we want to do adverts on, would you like to have us, yeah, can we advertise on your podcast? No, because actually the only, I find it interruptive unless you're a huge company to have adverts in the middle. I don't feel that I'm of that kind of stage of podcasting, but I can sort of position what we do. And if people like what you're offering, then I'm telling them this is what we do, so, and where to find us. So it's just a way of being visible without being overly salesy. So it's about building trust, I think.
So that is a super interesting one. Why do you think eventually putting ads in your show, you know, at the middle of the episode or pre-roll, whatever, will get in the way of that.
I think people are getting more familiar with it now. You're more used to it. But in all honesty, this is maybe a bit of imposter syndrome in myself. I feel it would be a bit arrogant to expect people to have to do it. I don't think it fits with my brand of what we're doing and why I'm putting it out there. Right? It's not about making money directly from the podcast. For me, it's about demonstrating credibility, thought leadership, putting something out there that hopefully people will recommend, as opposed to going, oh, you've got to go that and you've got to fast forward all the adverts, and it's got a bit too... I don't want it to be about that, to be honest.
No, I love that. So there is not a quote-unquote direct business model with the podcast. It's more about the branding that you get out of it, the authority, the credibility that allows you then to, well, talk to bigger and bigger guests, I imagine, reach more people, and then enable that, not even sales cycle, but just, hey, I'm there and I do that. And then you kind of have an inbound strategy of people coming to you thanks to the podcast.
It is really. It is about an inbound strategy. And you can do more. I mean, occasionally I will do time-sensitive offers. Like, we're going to do a special offer on running a training course. The downside, of course, is that people find your podcast. You know, they might find it now and go, oh, actually, this makes sense. They'll go back to a back episode. So in some ways, time-sensitive isn't always ideal because, you know, the offer's gone. You know, they might go back to something that was 2 years ago. So that's maybe the area where I don't necessarily do that too often.
Talk to me a bit about your business, Lucinda. What's your software business? What do you do exactly?
So the business is called Actus, and our purpose really is to build a better workplace for people, and the people is really important through software. So it's performance management software predominantly. So we were talking earlier, if you were trying to develop a high performance culture, you want your managers to set clear objectives and to have regular one-to-ones and provide good quality feedback. Our software will support them in that. It's still really important that the managers do it themselves. The software can't do it for them, but it makes it transparent and it enables that. And we have that was the sort of the starting point of the software, but we also have what you call 360 feedback. I've mentioned 360 feedback earlier. If you're trying to do culture change, we offer 360 feedback. We do talent
management. What's a 360 feedback? Just
360 feedback is a personal development tool, is the way I describe it. It's survey. It's really survey. The reason it's called 360 is, if I was going to say you want to have a 360 feedback, there'd be a series of questions. You would answer those questions. They're behavioral questions yourself. And then you'd get your line manager to answer those same questions, your peers to answer them, and your direct reports. So that's your concept of 360. And then ideally you would have a coach take you through the report to help you look at where you've got differences of viewpoint. It's a really powerful tool. It needs to be managed really carefully with coaching as well, because people are not every organization has got a really mature feedback culture. So you have to manage it quite carefully. But it's a really great way of going, oh, this is how good I think I am at this, and this is how good others think I am at this. So it's quite an interesting reality check for people in terms of things, and a good development tool. So that's your baseline, and then you can work to develop yourself further. So we offer a software that does that reporting, basically. So it manages the survey and then builds a pretty report, which you can then use for coaching. So it's overall software business. One of the differentiator of us, because there's more and more, since there weren't very many when we started out, is 2012 we came to the market with the software. It's now quite competitive, but why people like to work with us is because the software is extremely configurable. So we don't say you've got to do it this way. We go, what's your process? What are you trying to achieve? And we will configure the software to support it. We also do offer personal support, which links a bit with the podcast. Yeah, we're humans. We really work in partnership with the customers. And on top of that, quite a number of people, this links back to, I suppose, the stuff I do in the podcast, is also we offer support in terms of training, culture change. So we can help people get a better solution, because you buy software to achieve an outcome, a strategic outcome probably, and we've gone almost full circle here. But just putting the software in isn't going to make people better managers or, better performance, or it's not going to create culture change on its own. What creates culture change is the way your managers and leaders operate with it, the way in which your HR team uses the data from it, and manages people around it. So that's what makes the difference. So we also give support along those lines. And I think that's pretty unusual for a software business. So it's got that blend.
You said earlier that it was hard to expose a software business, hence the podcast. Why is so? Like, why is it harder to expose a software business to say to the world, hey, I'm out there proposing this, compared to any other lines? Like, where is that coming from and how do you kind of walk around this?
It's about the fact that, so when we went to Kendra Market in 2012, there was hardly anybody. It's SEO, but you could be visible by, I could write a blog and I could rank on Google. You didn't even have sponsored ads, right? And that's it. And then they brought sponsored ads out. It's about the movement in the marketplace. It's about competition and how challenging it is, how it gets increasingly challenging every year to be visible because there are more competitors. Not only are there more competitors, there are more competitors with lots of money who they will spend on Google Ads, they will spend on pay-per-click. So as a small business, our business, you know, there are competitors that do software now who probably pay more on Google Ads in a month than our entire business is worth in a year. So you just can't compete with those sort of marketing budgets. So that's where the podcast, it gives you, it's a really unique personal sight in. And people who want to buy people and want to buy into you, then it's a unique way of building trust with people.
Walk me through this. I love this sentence, people buy people, or people buy from people, not from company. What does that mean and why are you embracing that?
It is a bit of a cliche, actually, thinking about it, but I sold aerial photos when I was a student years ago, and it's about how you connect with people, right? You don't, with the exception of maybe where you're very wedded to a brand, like, you know, you've got amazing brand loyalty like Apple or something like that, then really, if you were looking at three software providers, then all of those software probably pretty much meets your needs. There may be much of a muchness. If there's no other differentiator, there's a little bit of difference in price. But what's going to make you go with one over the other? It's going to be the one that you felt that person genuinely understood your needs, listened to you, responded to you, you bought into them. So you will go with the one that the people that you liked the best. And the people you liked the best are the people who are probably being most responsive or the most useful to you, that you trust the most to do what they say they're going to. So, and that's one thing that's really important to me in the people that work within our team. They've got experience, they are genuine, they're not fly-by-night salespeople who make promises and don't keep them. They are genuine people who've got experience in consultancy, and it works well, particularly with our audience as well, because hopefully we're building trust with HR professionals and we genuinely understand their challenges, and we genuinely want to work in partnership with them. And as a small business as well, you know, I'm accountable, so I'm not going to say anything that doesn't do something. They can come back to me and say, this isn't what I need. So you've got higher level of trust, I think. That's what we're operating in. And that's a way of differentiating yourself from a large anonymous software business.
Love that. All about trust. People buy from people, not from company. That's what we believe in that so much, which is why we have two podcasts. It's like, literally with the podcast, well, A, you connect with people directly, right, one-to-one. But B, as soon as you start growing an audience, you in the ears of somebody for 45, 60 minutes. That person listens to basically two persons talking about a topic that interests them. And they're like, okay, I'm part of this conversation. I'm learning. And you link with your audience in a way that is very hardly achievable with any other media than podcast, right? This long form format that really enables that.
It's interesting. Just picking up that point that you make there, because I noticed this more myself recently in as a podcast that I'm not going to name it, that I like the content of, but I find the podcaster's accent and style irritating, and that will switch me off. And it's very intimate because you've got your earbuds in, and I'm walking along, this person starts to, it feels they're in your head, literally in your ears. If it gets annoying, you don't want it. So whereas, yeah, the flip is also true. If someone's really useful, you're really engaging with it, you kind of got that quite personal connection because you're physically, feels more personal than watching something to me because you've got these earbuds in. Like, you know, I listen every day when I walk the dogs and things like that. So just an observation, I think that it's quite intimate because you've got them in your ears.
100%. So without giving away names, Lucinda, what's the nationality of the accent that you despise that much? Just so I'm reassured that...
No, it's a British person, and they just have a strange tone of... They have a strange way of speaking. And they make this... I'm listening to it for subject matter expertise. I'm interested in the topic. It's on nutrition. I'm interested in the topic, but this person makes it a bit too much about them. And I think that's actually an interesting maybe point to draw out, that as an interviewer, when you've got people or guests on a podcast, for me, it is about allowing them to be the experts and giving them chance to talk. And you want to talk enough to keep the conversation going, to make it a conversation, but try not to take it away. And that's interesting because it makes me reflect. I hope I don't do that when this person does it. I hope I don't make it all about me. This person, I just feel they get the balance wrong occasionally.
So the two things about this, I think there are like kind of two sides of the story. Our very first contact in the podcast world, basically, is an amazing podcast. He has a recruitment, actually, podcast in Treasury. And it's like the biggest lesson I learned from hosting conversations and hosting a podcast is ask great questions and then shut up. Like the whole speaking time for him shouldn't be more than 15 to 20% throughout the whole episode. It's like it's about the guest. And for certain podcast formats, I would beg to argue that's fair. On other formats, I think it's cool to have a flowing conversation, like to also give a bit of input, give a bit of insights, and like make it a two-way conversation to also like bring all the stuff that might have not happened if it was just like, hey, okay, tell me about this, or hey, what about this? This kind of thing. So there is two sides of the story, but yes, if you make somebody take the time out of their day to come on a show and to discuss their insights, you also want them to put them in the spotlight, right? So it depends, but I would agree with that.
Yes, I draw certain formats when it is two people talking together. That's the design of it. But yeah, 15-20% feels right, because you also don't want to just ask a question and then not link it. So like you're doing here, you're asking a question and you ask a natural follow-up question, because that shows you're listening. That's what good, you're listening to it and you're following on from the conversation. So that's what makes it a conversation. You're not going, oh, actually, let me tell you about why we do this, and then this neither. So it's the balance.
Thank you. Lucinda, Every Woman Tech Entrepreneur of the Year in 2016, winner of one of the UK's top 10 women in business 2020, top 32 female tech leaders in 2021, and the list goes on. What is all that about, and is there any link with the podcast?
In terms of those, I don't think any of those particularly would have linked to the podcast, but the podcast is all about personal brand, I suppose. It supports those sort of things in personal brand, which is, again, where if you're helping people become podcasters, that is often why you might do a podcast, to give yourself to elevate your personal brand. There is a disadvantage. It's pros and cons, because you don't want your brand, so Actus, our software, I don't want it to be all about Lucinda either, because that's so it is a bit of a balance, but it's just ways of being visible. And to be perfectly honest, so I also wrote a book. And so getting the podcast to be visible, actually, I'll come back to a point you talk about top tips, aren't you, later? So I'll come back to trying to get the podcast to rank and things like that. And it's the same with the book. These things come into personal brand. And same with applying for competitions, really. You're doing it to give yourself something to put on LinkedIn. That's like a podcast that's free, right? It's a way of being visible to elevate your personal brand, and in turn, hopefully, elevate the brand of our software and generate inbound leads. That is ultimately the strategy, because our business is absolutely requires inbound leads to carry on growing and to be visible. So really, that's how it fits into the sales and marketing strategy, but it's quite a soft strategy. And it's the same with going for awards. I personally find it a bit cringy quite a lot of the time. But it's actually really important to put yourself out there and do those sort of things and try and get that recognition and that increased visibility.
And so do you apply for such awards, or do they come to you, and do they just knock at your door at some point and like, hey, Lucinda, we want to give you Woman of the Year? How does it typically happen?
So the Every Woman of the Year one, that was quite prestigious, and I was really proud of that, and I had to go through an interview process. And yeah, I think you just would have, wow, actually, you've had quite, I'd be at that stage, I'd been bootstrapping the business, which basically means you're self-funding building a software business as opposed to got investment. And so that was how that was judged in quite a rigorous way. The other ones, like the 32 people in tech, genuinely, thanks very much. I've no idea how you end up on these things. Don't know, but thanks. Okay, brilliant. Okay, but I mean, let's see. I guess, to be honest, maybe something like the podcast does, because you're visible. So they'll be looking at things, look at what you're putting out there and you see what comes up. So some things, they are all a little bit mysterious, but it's useful free marketing for the business and otherwise. And I would guess that the podcast does play a part in it, because what you're able to do is, I'm putting stuff on LinkedIn on a weekly basis, or my team are saying, here's a new episode. Other people, if you had guests on, are sharing that. So therefore, you might see a new audience. It's coming to visibility, but you're putting something out that's genuinely of value on a regular basis. So whereas if I was just posting, oh, this is my weekend, or please come and buy from Actus, that doesn't work on those social media. So having the podcast is a really great tool to make yourself visible on a regular basis, because you are putting something out of value to people.
And actually, I'm just thinking, if the podcast is 5 years old, the entrepreneur, so every woman tech entrepreneur of the year of 2016 could have not been related to the show.
No, it wasn't. That was the idea. And not started doing it. No, that's to do with software.
What about the books? I mean, Lucinda, you're doing everything, basically. Software, podcast, awards, and book. Like, okay, so what's about this? How to be a change superhero? Is it linked anyhow to the business or the podcast or not at all? What's happening there?
That just happened to one of my books.
Oh, here we go. What a transition. That's amazing. I like the cover, actually.
So there's many questions. The honest answer, I'll start with the really clear. Do you know, I had always fancied writing. Again, if you think about it, what I've been putting out over the years, I've been writing papers and things like that. So I've written lots of content out there. One of the topics that I could write about regularly is change. So I knew about it. Also, when I was talking to you about the software, people need to do culture change, right, in terms of rolling out software. So it is relevant to the business. And I think I'd always fancied writing a book. And I think it was just around lockdown or just before COVID. So you've got a lot more time to do stuff here, right? I wasn't going to London anymore. There was someone mentioned, oh, I did a business book challenge, and this I'll shout out for Practical Inspiration. She has a 10-day business book challenge, this lady. Actually, this was before lockdown. I came up with a concept for a book. You had to plan it out, and you did a little bit of planning on it every day for 10 days. And then out of, say, 25 people, she would choose a winner, and the ones who won could get a publishing contract. So I actually won that particular thing. I was like, okay, so she thinks it's got some legs. I should actually do the book. So I just went, yeah, let's just do it. It came out. We launched it in lockdown. So you write it and then it takes a while to go out. We did a virtual book launch. It sad a bit about that, because you didn't really get to go and put it in a bookshop immediately or anything like that. But you know, still, again, it's very similar to the process. It's something you've created of value and creates credibility in terms of that.
So what's the secret recipe? How do I become a change superhero if tomorrow I want to change everything in my company or change the culture, Lucinda? Can you give me the key takeaways of the book? Without spoiling too much, because we want people to buy it eventually. We'll put the link in the description.
It's actually going to have a key takeaway sort of thing. The book is divided into three parts. First part is, how can you personally be a change agent, change superhero? So that plays a bit into the HR uprising concept of being brave, standing up and being countered, being courageous, being a great communicator, being a great collaborator, convincing people that change needs to happen. So some of it's about our personal style and behavior and demeanor. The second part of it is about managing change. So understanding how people have different emotions through change, thinking about how you can help people see the purpose of change and why they should do it. And then the third part of the book is about managing large-scale organizational change. So that's much more a structured approach. So there's models, this one called the Kotter's 7 Steps to Managing Change. So I go through things like that, where it's more of these models and how you can apply it. It's quite a practical book. It's actually really quite easy to read, in terms of the fact that it's not a really highly academic tome. It's designed to be relatively friendly, but something you could pick up and go, actually, this is what you do. And it comes with a toolkit of resources that you can use to support change. So if you're someone who wants to do more change management, and that is a strategic HR role, it's an organisational development role, then it's quite a nice handbook for people to reference.
Here we go. All the tools in hand to become a change superhero.
Exactly.
Amazing. What's there's a question that Elon Musk asks in all his interviews in recruiting, quite no pun intended, with the HR function. He says, what's the toughest problem you had to solve, and how did you solve it? I want to tweak this question a bit. What's the biggest challenge, the biggest problem you faced, Lucinda, in podcast or business, or either, and how did you solve it?
I think generally, I'll go on the podcast one in terms of this. How do you make it visible, and how do you expose and get maximum listeners from the start, get off to a really positive start? Because this probably swings into, you know, tips for podcasters. So I went, when I did the podcast, I went on a course run by a guy called Rob Moore, who was known as a disruptive entrepreneur. And they do a sort of podcasting. So a lot of this, you know, first place to them, a lot of what I learned, I put into practice, and it was right. It was useful. And the things that they said, obviously you want to have a quality product. The things that we're doing about making sure that it's decent quality content. But they also said, make sure you've got enough content initially. The people, if they listen to one, that they can download, they'll binge. So make sure you've got, if you launch with at least 6 episodes or even 12. I launched with 6. Make those out, get those out there and put them live at the same time. And then also, how can you get the maximum number of people to subscribe in terms of this? So I came off this particular podcast thing. I thought, well, how do you get people to do it? Because it takes, how do you get people to do it instantly on it? And we were going to be exhibiting at the CIPD, which is the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development a festival that they have, a kind of open day in terms of things. So I knew that in 6 weeks' time, we were going to be there. So that was quite quick. But okay, I'm going to launch there because that will give me the maximum opportunity. Or be honest, Dan, there'll be loads of people who are our audience, because it's all very well getting my mates to download it, but they haven't really, I don't know, brought software and it's not relevant to them. So it was like, okay, set the goal, make sure you've got the content, get it set up, ready to go, and then boom, big bang launch at that time. So do a bit of marketing in advance, but then actually at the festival, myself and my colleague Jane, she goes, have you come across the new HR Rising podcast? And again, there weren't very many HR podcasts about at that point either. She was like, you had to find it, it's here on Apple. So she's literally going on people's phones as they're walking into the CIPD conference going, here, subscribe. So, and then the key with that is it's the same thing actually if you want to launch a best-selling book, which I am book giving the intense. How do you work?
You need to watch the video.
How can you make your podcast visible in and this is, you need to launch with a big bang and you need a load of people to download it in that first week. And so therefore, as a result, I was able to get people to download it and you start to then be visible in the Apple top charts. And it's like, you see, it's really exciting seeing it going up and up and up. And there was one there, what was it called? There was one that was, I forgot what it was, just also, I couldn't quite get behind it. And then finally I overtook it about 6 days later. So I was screenshotting away the fact you've got number one in the Apple podcast chart. Because the reality is, yeah, so I launched it and got it number one in that week. And then it does rank every now and then. But the reality is now, again, competition, it's not got that kind of same pull. We've got some really popular podcasts. So you're not, occasionally I'll be in the top 200. But again, it was probably the number of podcasts out there now is 5 times more, loads more. But it's really useful to get your subscribers in the first place. And then people talk about it to each other. And then you can post that we're in the top things. But you get that social credibility of being the number one ranking podcast. But to do that, this is my tip for people listening. If you want to launch, lots of people get really, I think, oh, I've done one episode, I'm going to launch the next. But no, you want to have enough, because if you think about it, I don't know, 100 people downloading 6 episodes in that week is ranks higher. And also when it is a new podcast, it counts more. So it's the same when I launched my book. So the publisher said, what you need to do is you launch your Kindle version at a discounted price for 24 hours as you go live with it. So you do that and you get all of you, you know, everyone you know to buy that. It gives you a spike. So I got to number one with How to Be a Change Superhero, the Kindle version. So I can call it a best-selling business book. It's marketing, all right? It's marketing. I'm giving away all my secrets, you know. But you've got to do it all in a hit. So people get, oh, okay, great, I'm going to launch it. I'll tell people to do it. No, you've really got to get that, make the most of getting that spike, because their algorithms or whatever it is pick up that it's a spike, everyone's buying it, or pre-orders works with Amazon. Suddenly all those go live and you get to have that ranking and you get that social proof of it being there. So I've kind of answered that question, but that was the biggest problem. Biggest challenge is, how do you get something like this in a very crowded marketplace to be visible, to rank? Because once you rank, you get the maximum validity, social proof, evidence. You can always say it's been a best-selling piece, which you can then shout about. So this is all about marketing, about credibility and being visible for free, by the way, pretty much. So how else can you get that free visibility, shout out something to try and punch above your weight? I run a small business. I run a micro business. We don't have big marketing budgets. And fundamentally, this is what these things are, to actually help you punch above your weight in terms of those things.
Wow. Golden nuggets here. Thanks for giving away all your secrets, Lucinda.
You just got to do it, to go for it. But people, like I said, people don't. They think, oh, I'm not going to do it. I'll just do one episode. Well, you're never really going to rank. It's going to be a very slow burn. That doesn't mean you won't have a very popular podcast. But if you can rank, then you can shout about it and more people will know about you sooner and it's going to help you.
100%. And I'm going to double down on just... So I think all the advice you gave are absolutely on point. Really, really like them. The one thing I would add to this is, let's not be afraid to ask your family, your colleagues, your company, even if you're a small business who starts a podcast, like, say, hey, make it as easy as possible for them to just leave a review, even write it if needed. We had done that. It's like, link to Apple Podcasts. Hey, you can post a review and a rating even without listening to an episode. Spotify is a bit different. They ask you to listen to a couple of episodes for a certain amount of time before being able to leave a review. So that's a bit of a different metric. But Apple Podcasts. So Spotify, you can leave a review only after, I mean, you can leave a rating. There is no such thing as review on Spotify. Only after having listened to a few episodes for a certain amount of time. It's not like just play and you can post a rating. It's like you need to play a couple of episodes for, I think it's at least 20 minutes or 40% of the episode, something like this, to be able to rate it, to validate and filter to make sure people cannot cheat the system. But on Apple Podcasts, so do not buy ratings. I do not recommend that. But what you can do is, hey, if you have 20 employees in your business, send the link in the communication and just say, hey guys, would help the company a lot if we would just put a rating on this show. Let's all push 5 stars. And all of a sudden, you differentiate from 90% of the podcasts who have no rating in your category there. All the rest is very good. Hey, here you go. Can definitely help. And I'm like, when we onboard clients, I'm just saying like, hey, ask your daughter and son, probably now have an iPhone as well. Just ask them to leave a review. Maybe not even a review, but a rating. That will definitely make the difference. And I think that quite covers the advice to podcasters, Lucinda. And that was a hell of a great challenge and great way to solve it. Absolutely love that. Anything else you'd recommend to podcasters, actually? What would you recommend people if they want to start a podcast? I call them the wannabe podcasters. Or podcasters even who actually want to get that exposure, want to get that branding. I like the point you made around quality earlier. Anything else you'd like to recommend?
I'm going to assume that they've got the quality and the content, I think, is what I would say. Right. The one thing that I think is challenging and what I like, it's kind of the same thing, but I'll break it into two, is make sure if you have a guest on, if I'm doing my own topic, and I don't think that many people do their own ones, most people do have guests, but I've got content to go through, then how do you make it digestible for people? So a bit like we've got a list of questions here of topics we're going through, there's kind of a list of bullets that we could summarize. So for me, I have had guests on that thinking, oh man, I'm lost and I'm talking to you, what's the point of what we're talking about? So for me, I really always want there to be some takeaways that are available to the audience. There need to be key bullets, key takeaways to that it's being valuable. You're not just listening to it for headway. You've got something of value out of the podcast. And I think you can make it easier or more difficult just by things like, I'm going to go through these key points. Yeah, that classic start, middle, end, just summarizing those things, because people have listened and then go, actually, you can end on these points. And in fairness to that irritating podcaster I talked about before, what they do do a really good thumb up at the end. So in fairness to them. So what I would say is that make sure, just think about your structure of it and try and keep your guests, if you have guests, try and keep them on track in terms of what are the points. And that maybe is another point where you do need to contribute, just not listen. And so, okay, is this a key point? This, can I just summarize? You've talked about 5 key points here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then such and such. So your job is to try and make it digestible and tangible for the audience to be able to get something of value out of it. That's one of the things I see. And maybe just choose your guests with caution, because I had one guest that I just got totally lost. I had to go and get the transcript to cut out. They just went off on tangents all the way through the conversation. And so I had to really do some hard editing to get it to be of value. In hindsight, I should have had the conversation up front. I didn't vet it well enough there. So think about what you're trying to get out of it. If you're trying to provide quality content, make sure it comes over in a way that people can digest it.
What do you think about interrupting guests versus editing out pieces that you're like, okay, well, it's just ramble here, but we will cut it out in post-production, just to avoid the very problem that you were facing with that. What do you think about interrupting your guest?
I just try and keep it on track. I try not to interrupt guests. Sometimes it's hard not to because of the fact that you're... So I would try not to interrupt. What I'm saying, I might do occasionally, it's not always that I'm interrupting them. Sometimes it's to do with Zoom, do you know, the timing on the audio. However, occasionally I will jump in on things, and I probably am worse than some people on that. That's my personality. I want to talk about things, but I try not to. But what I would rather do is, if they have gone on, I then start to try and give... clues, like I say, okay, so if we just briefly, we're running out of time here, or actually, can I just summarize? So what we're really saying is this. Can I clarify, is this what you're really saying? So I might try and, if they've got to say, the key point to take out of that is that correct? So I'll try and use communication skills within the podcast to do that. I occasionally will edit it, but editing's really, really time consuming. So I would rather get a decent cut the first time. I mean, I have people who do it for me, but for me to get them to do it, I would need to say, you need to edit here, here, and here. So I that's how my agency works. That's why I have a low-cost way of getting the podcast out. I know there's another podcaster in my area, absolutely lovely person, but I think she spends most of her week doing her podcast, planning the podcast. She loves it. It's her baby. And then editing it. I haven't got time to do that. I'm running a business. The podcast is a sideline. It has to fit into, you know, an hour or two a week. So yeah, working at that. So really more about using my skills, my abilities to keep the person on track. A bit about agreeing what the key points are up front. So I would always go, what do you think the key takeaways that you want us to get out of this episode? It's really helpful if we have a list of 5 or 6 key points that we're going to emphasize. That's that I would have agreed that up front with the person. I will try not to go through all of them because basically you end up doing the podcast before the podcast. But then I'll try and manage them during it to kind of keep them on track.
Wow. That was an absolute masterpiece, Lucinda. Question we asked to all our guests to finalize this episode is, what are 3 podcasts that you listen to personally that you would recommend our audience? And I think you can include the one with the noisy accents or the annoying accents, whatever it is.
No, it's not going on. It's not going on. So I do listen to podcasts regularly, but what I listen to, I don't tend to listen to work stuff, I think mainly because I do one. So I listen to politics type stuff, and I listen to nutrition, the 2 areas that I listen to quite a lot. And this is an international audience, isn't it? So one is American, actually, and the others are kind of more UK centric. So one nutrition one that I like is called Nutrition Facts Podcast, and it's this guy who, what is it called? Nutrition Facts Podcast. It's not the most glamorous one, but the guy is a doctor. He goes and gets all the research out of stuff and gives you evidence based facts on nutrition as opposed to the stuff that's out there. And he's not sponsored or anything like that. And it's just good quality stuff if you're interested in that. Then the other ones, I was slightly going to cheat. there's a series in the UK which is the Resties series, and I mean this one is very, very popular. They've always had the Resties history. That's not my go-to. I think that's good. So the Resties politics is these two one's an ex-politician, one's not, but it's Alistair Campbell and Rory Stewart. It's really intelligent. It gives me faith. I mean, in the UK, politics is a bit of a mess, right? It just gives you some faith that there's some grown-ups out there and they explain things that I didn't understand. So I find it educational, interesting and relevant, and kind of gives you a bit of hope that things will sort it out, be sorted out. And then they've got a sister podcast that's just been recently launched, which is my new favourite in terms of lighter relief, and it's called The Rest Is Entertainment. And these are just a couple of people. They talk about TV and some shows, and again, intelligent people talking in a lighter way, so you learn about it, but it's really quite easy listening. So depending on what mood I'm in, well, I'll listen to all of those each week, probably, and a few others. But depending on what mood I'm in, those are the ones I go for.
Love that. So, Nutrition Facts podcast, The Rest Is Entertainment, and I quite didn't grasp the name of the second one.
The Rest Is Politics.
The Rest Is Politics. Ah, yeah, okay, and it's hosted, so the two, Rest Is Politics and The Rest Is Entertainment, is hosted by those two same people.
No, different. That's Rest Is Politics. So those two are ex.
Okay.
Those two are ex. But they're experts in their field, and the entertainment ones are experts in the field. It's, one of them's the guy that wrote the Thursday Murder Club. But they're funny. They're good podcasters to listen to, in my opinion. And those are conversational, so they're a duo. So it's a good to that conversation and a bit of banter between each other and a little bit of, you know, pulling each other, teasing each other or otherwise. But so you kind of feel like you're part of it, which is quite nice. The Nutrition Facts podcast is much more about the guy, just basically a bit more solo episode that I would do, but basically telling you what the facts are about that particular health issue.
Amazing. We'll have to give them a go. Lucinda, thank you so much for coming on the show.